This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A new round of tariff hikes has markets opening in the red. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio, who's on assignment. We've got news out of China this morning that the government there is hiking tariffs on tens of billions of dollars worth of U.S. products. Those are set to start June 1st. It's retaliation for a U.S. tariff hike on $200 billion in Chinese products that kicked in on Friday. President Trump's top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, acknowledged over the weekend that U.S. consumers will foot the bill for some of those tariffs, disagreeing with public statements from the president. For more on this, I'm joined by Julia Coronado, founder of Macro Policy Perspectives. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
So why are the markets taking this trade news so badly this morning?
Either companies are going to pass it on through higher prices, which could then dampen demand, or they're going to have to absorb it in their profit margins. But it's not good for business either way.
Now, that runs counter to what President Trump has been tweeting this morning. He's falsely saying that U.S. consumers can completely avoid paying these tariffs. Why does he continue to kind of toe that line?
Well, I think he has his political objectives, and the market is more focused on the economics and the business realities of it. So there is a discrepancy there.
Julia Coronado is founder of Macro Policy Perspectives. Thank you, Julia.
My pleasure.
And now moving to India, which needs to create 1 million jobs each month just to absorb new workers. Recently, leaked figures showed unemployment there is at a 45-year high. That's bad news for Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who hopes to be reelected this month. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Anu Anand, has more from Delhi.
Half of India's population is under the age of 25. That's 600 million job seekers struggling to get a foot in the door. 19-year-old Akash, who's training to be an accountant, is one of them.
You get at least 5,000 applicants for one job opening. You have to have an inside connection to land a job.
Across the country, corrupt job placement agencies profit from the desperation. Manoj is one victim. He says the agencies charge a commission, promise a job, and then disappear with the money. So why isn't a country with 6.5% growth creating enough jobs? Sabina Dhawan is president of Just Jobs, a policy think tank in Delhi.
Jobs is a complicated issue, and there is no one solution. We need to improve productivity in agriculture by investing in infrastructure. We need to also look at upgrading the education and skills for workers in the service sector. And lastly, we need to invest in labor-intensive manufacturing. Everything from things like gems and jewelry making to footwear and apparel.
The lack of current employment data makes it impossible to gauge how much progress has been made in the 5 years since Prime Minister Narendra Modi was elected. But with more than 80% of the population working without contracts or regular wages, it's how people feel about their prospects that will determine if he's reelected. In New Delhi, I'm the BBC's Anu Anand for Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
In southwest Georgia, farmers have been waiting for federal disaster aid since October. That's when Hurricane Michael devastated the region. From WABE in Atlanta, Emma Hurt explains what that delay has meant for the local economy.
Hi, sir. Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. Can get better.
I'm too.
Valerie Cook grew up in Colquitt in southwest Georgia. Last summer, she reopened what had been her parents' grocery, Privet Store. She sells drinks, snacks, and groceries, mostly to farmers. And when they have a bad year, she says, so does everyone else.
When they don't have income coming in, I don't have income coming in. And so, yes, you know, some of my customers do trade with me and charge by the week. And if they didn't have a paycheck coming in, I didn't get paid.
After Hurricane Michael, she says, if it weren't for the out-of-town tree removal workers who came by the store, she would have had to close up. The October storm brought 150-mile-an-hour winds that toppled 20% of Georgia's pecan trees and 2 million acres of timber. Calhoun County farmer Eric Kimbrell lost about half of his peanuts and gotten to the storm. And since then, he says, the community's pulled together by pitching in to fix up buildings and by giving each other a break. Like the local farm hardware store that's worked with him over missed payments.
I just told him, I said, look, I appreciate you working with me. It's been 3 months since I ain't paid my bill, you know.
He had been hoping to pay that debt with a farm loan and eventually got that loan, but later than he wanted. And those loans are important. Most farmers need them to cover expenses until harvest, and they hardly had a harvest last year because of the storm, which made it difficult for many to get their new loans approved. And that made it difficult to pay their bills and difficult to get new crops in the field on time. The delays have put farmers like Kimbrell in a vulnerable spot.
Yeah, I think it's a 3 or 5 year process getting out of the hole. That's if we don't have another hurricane. That's if Mother Nature cooperates.
This is where the federal aid would help. Without it,
there'll be some folks who will not farm because the disaster package has not been passed.
That's Hank Jester. He processes loan applications in nearby Blakely. 80% of his business is ag. Georgia has put up $75 million for an emergency loan program, but with $2.5 billion in crop loss, farmers are still looking to the federal government for relief. In Atlanta, I'm Emma Hurt for Marketplace.
And in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.